Welcome to the Kingdom Crossroads Podcast with Pastor Robert Thibodeau. Using an interview format, Pastor Bob will introduce you to men and women whose ministries are impacting this world with the gospel, and will also provide commentary and insight on end-time prophetic events we now see happening in the news. Now here is Pastor Robert Thibodeau.
Everyone everywhere, this is Pastor Robert Thibodeau. Welcome to the Kingdom Crossroads Podcast today. We're so blessed that you're joining us. You know, PTSD, or post-traumatic stress disorder, is a common term nowadays. But what exactly is PTSD and who's affected by it? Well, almost 8 million people in the United States are considered to have PTSD right now. It's a severe mental health condition that is caused basically by a traumatic event or a series of traumatic events. Now, normally today we think of the war veterans having PTSD. They've seen things repeatedly that most of society cannot even fathom, and they had to suppress their normal reactions to these events in order to continue and complete their assigned missions. After repeated exposures to this type of environment, it develops into PTSD. But our veterans are not alone in this. Many people do not realize that a police officer, firefighters, EMS personnel, as well as doctors and nurses, they deal with things most people never see or rarely see. And just like our military brothers and sisters, they must suppress their natural tendencies of avoidance in order to accomplish their assigned job that they're responsible for. You know, as a police officer, I can't tell you how many accident victims I had to try and search to find an ID. You know, the cries of fear, pain, knowing they were probably going to die, and trying to reassure them that, you know, help was on the way, only to see them pass away just as the ambulance was coming around the corner up the road. You know, people with limbs that had been removed in the accident, motorcyclists who, for whatever reason, lost control while going too fast, sliding down the highway, leaving skin and appendages along the roadway, or couple times even being decapitated by a guardrail. I mean, yeah, those are things I've seen. But I could not allow it to process because I had a job to do at that time. You know, firefighters have the same things and probably worse. I mean, they're the ones charging into burning buildings and finding smoldering bodies. And I could go on and on. I think you get the point. After piling on day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year, it all really does begin to take a toll. We know more today than at any time in our history about PTSD, its effects, some treatments. It's hard for someone to talk about their PTSD with someone who's never experienced the sights, the sounds, the smells, the trauma that some people have. The suicide rate among military veterans and first responders is significantly higher than the rest of society. That's why you hear cops and firefighters, EMS, military veterans talking about a brotherhood. It's because they can relate. They understand each other. And that alone gives a little bit of support. Often when nobody else can understand, their fellow workers can. Well, I guess you know what we're talking about today now. My guest today is Linda Green. She is a retired firefighter and assistant chief for the California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection in, of course, California. She spent 30 years on the front lines. And if you think about that, every single year there have been headlines of massive fires in California. That was her job. When everyone else was being evacuated and everybody else was running away from the fires, she was leading people into the fires. She was responsible for their safety and their welfare, as well as the community. All of those stresses built up over time, and you guessed it, resulted in PTSD. Linda's written a book titled Solving the Post-Traumatic Stress Brain Injury Puzzle, A First Responder's GPS. We'll be talking about her book, as well as some aspects of PTSD and ways to begin coping with that injury. Help me welcome to the program, Linda Green. Linda, thank you for taking the time to join us today.
Oh, thank you for having me. Right. Now, it's definitely a pleasure to be here.
I appreciate it, because I know, you know, this is a hectic time, just say the least, going on with everything going on with the virus, and that just increases the stress levels, you know. And that's one thing that, you know, we can't do anything about, which helps bring out those triggering events. But let me ask you, let me start with this question. Other than that brief introduction I just gave, tell us in your own words, who is Linda Green?
Well, Linda Green is a happily married woman of 32 years. Actually, I think her
praise God.
33rd anniversary is later this month. I have two rescue dogs, and they're quite the pair. I like kayaking and hiking. I do watercolor painting. My husband is, I'm his second wife, and so he has five children from his first marriage. They're all married and grown up, and they have kids, so the grandchildren in the family is like 22.
Mm-hmm.
And I need a Rolodex to keep track of all of them. And, you know, it's like I got a brother and a sister, and I got two grandnephews and nieces, and you know, I still have, actually, I kind of miss hanging out with my friends because of the shelter in place order here in California. But, you know, it's, I'm just so grateful that I am still around to be able to enjoy all those things. Yeah. And that I have recovered enough from my own post-traumatic stress injury that I can talk about and be an advocate for others who aren't ready yet or capable of advocating for themselves.
Amen. Tell us about your career. What made you want to become a firefighter to begin with?
Well, it started in high school. Not that there's any family members that are in the fire service. You know, my parents lean more towards the law enforcement side. But I needed a way to pay for college. And back then, the California Department of Forestry was referred to as CDF. They go by Cal Fire now, mm-hmm. Long story. But I needed a way to pay for college, and I wasn't going to get any type of scholarship or anything like that. And there was an opening. They're testing for, you know, later that summer. So I was a senior in high school, signed up, got interviewed, went through their physical agility test, and I was an athlete in high school, so I didn't have any problem with that. I ended up getting a job 3 days after I graduated from high school. I put on my uniform for the first time.
Mm.
And I continued to work as a seasonal employee for the next six summers. And about my third summer, I finally got interested enough in it to pursue it as a career. And like everybody else, go to school, you take tests, and you just start chasing that brass ring to get the permanent job. And I finally got hired permanently by Cal Fire. And I started at the next level up from firefighter. I was a fire apparatus engineer working in Fresno County. And so that involves a lot more of what you talked about in your introduction, you know, going to structure fires, car accidents, medical aids, more typical for, you know, city county fire protection. Eventually, though, I made it back into the wireland side of things when I made captain a few years later. And at that point in time, I was the first 4 years I was a captain, I was actually running a inmate firefighting crew. And so we'd take these inmates out and we'd go to these wireland fires and just cut line, and it really got me fine-tuned basically on wireland fire behavior, safety things.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, I went back to the station life, and I did that for the next 12 years and really started studying more advanced fire topics and got certified in, I can't even tell you how many different incident command system components.
Oh, yeah.
Class. Right. So, what class am I taking this month, right?
Yeah,
so
right.
I have a 2-inch binder full of certificates over my 30-year career. And eventually, though, you know, my knee wasn't doing so great. And I started thinking, well, I'm either going to end my career working in our command center, which is our dispatch center, or I'm going to promote up to battalion chief. And I'm fortunate and grateful that I made it to battalion chief. And from there, I went to assistant chief. And that's where I ended up after 32 years with the department. Yeah.
As you were going up in the ranks, did you observe changes that you now identify as PTSD in your fellow firefighters that concerned you, but you didn't really know what was going on at the time?
No, not really. I mean, it's every now and then somebody would be like more stressed than normal, and it's easier to see in people that you work normally with on a routine basis. But even then, there's such a stigma around the whole aspect of occupational stress. And I'm sure you saw it in your own career where you don't talk about those things, especially back in the 80s when I started. The term itself, PTSD, was such a new thing. And it came out of the Veterans Administration and what they were going to do with, and they were trying to figure out what was going on with the soldiers coming back from the Vietnam War. And they finally were able to group all these clusters of symptoms into this post-traumatic stress disorder, as it became known. And that's where part of the myth of it only impacts combat veterans came from, is because it's so tightly affiliated with the veterans. Yep. And that's the way it was for years. But it wasn't too much longer that people actually started thinking, well, this is also kind of what's going on in the fire service and law enforcement. And, you know, there, I know in my own department, there were attempts to start addressing the critical incident stress part of the job, and it kind of went in fits and starts. They would get something going and there was nobody to keep pushing it, or and so it just wasn't really growing. And finally got to a point here in California, anyhow, especially after all our major wildland fires we've been having for the last 5 years, it's finally locked in and it's got support at the highest level in the department, and they're getting the funding they finally need to get the staffing so that there are resources up and down the state for people in the department who are battling occupational stress. Even short of getting a diagnosis of PTS, you know, it's like everything you talked about that you saw in your career, we have 7,000 people in the department, and some of them are working strictly on the wildland side, and some of them are very much in working in contract cities, where cities, especially in Southern California, have contracted with the department to be their city fire protection. And so those people in particular are really seeing that all this that you're talking about. And, you know, it doesn't matter where you're at. It's, it could be one call, that one viewpoint is enough to trigger a PTS injury. Or some people, you know, I volunteer at a retreat for first responders with PTSD, and some of the people coming in, they can't pin it on one particular call, but it's the cumulative effect of the stress that gets them there. And it's interesting. I was just reading an article yesterday in the New England Journal of Medicine, and they're talking about, oh, the doctors and nurses, they're not seeing that traumatic stuff, so they're not likely to get PTSD, but anxiety and depression, yes, but it's a totally discounting the effect of cumulative stress. So I think they're wrong, but
amen.
Yeah.
Leonard, we're going to take a break here because I want to give some people information on your book. So we'll come right back after this message. We'll be right back.
Hey, folks, Pastor Bob here. Post-traumatic stress disorder is a very serious condition that has become more widely recognized in the medical community over the last 10 years or so. And Linda Green's book, Solving the Post-Traumatic Stress Brain Injury Puzzle, A First Responder's GPS, is a must-read and a must-have if you or someone you care about has PTSD. After 30-plus years on the front line as a first responder, Linda worked her way up to assistant chief of a major fire protection agency in California, and she fell under the tenacious claws of PTSD. This book details some of the steps she took to regain control of her life, and she knows it will help you as well. So go down to the show notes to order your copy of Linda Green's book, Solving the Post-Traumatic Stress Brain Injury Puzzle, A First Responder's GPS. Do so today.
All right, we're back now with Linda Green. She's the author of a book on PTSD, Solving the Post-Traumatic Stress Brain Injury Puzzle, A First Responder's GPS. We've been talking about the development of these PTSD symptoms and identifying them and finally getting the higher-ups in the medical field and the first responders hierarchy, I guess you could say, of recognizing this is something they'd be need to be addressed. Linda, what kind of symptoms do people exhibit that have PTSD?
A lot of people, one of the first symptoms that shows up is sleep disruption. The insomnia, for me in particular, I know that was my first symptom, is I just couldn't sleep. I would get maybe 2 or 3 hours of sleep every night. Mm. You know, some people have nightmares or flashbacks, paranoia, startle response, being the Incredible Hulk 1 minute, or being the mild-mannered Bill Baxter the other. And it's just depression and anxiety, just not wanting to interact with people. Isolation is big. Mm-hmm. You just don't want to go out and deal with people. You just can't function. It impacts your brain, so you start making maybe some poor decisions, or you can't focus at work. That was one of the ones I was dealing with. It's just, there's like 4 main symptom clusters that they talk about in the medical journals. But it's a combination of all of them. It's not just one. If you're just not sleeping well, maybe you're just dealing with, an overload and you're just dealing with excess stress. But it's when you start stacking all these different symptoms on top of each other. And when you do go in and talk to somebody about here's what's going on, they'll look at your medical history as well. And they'll first try and rule out anything else that they can diagnose you with. If they can do that, they'll do that. But they'll also look, are you abusing drugs or alcohol? Because, abusing substances like that can also contribute similar type symptoms. So it's like all this stuff has to go on. Has it been going on for more than 30 days, right? So because there's a kind of a step in between being stressed, being in a stressful situation, and getting a post-traumatic stress diagnosis, there's a sub-step called acute stress and has a similar symptomology to it, minus a few other key things that will trigger that diagnosis into a PTSD. So they look at all that stuff. And one of the symptoms that's really not even talked about, and I mentioned it briefly, does it impact your ability to function? And it's like you can have all those other things, but if you're still able to do your job, still able to work in society and do all those normal things, you won't get the diagnosis. But it's when it really starts impacting your ability to function. And that's a standalone symptom right there. It's not clustered with anything. That's a symptom. If you can't function, then that's one of the things that doesn't get talked about. Everybody talks about the nightmares and all the other stuff. That's all the real popular. It's all Hollywood and stuff like that, but that ability to function.
Yeah, as you said that, a friend of mine, prior friend, we had a series of fatality accidents, I'd say within a couple of weeks, and they were all pretty bad. And this one night, this cop that I knew, he just couldn't deal with it anymore. And I remember after the situation was over and the roadway was opened back up, and he just walked into the station in the middle of the shift. It's like, 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning, took off his gun belt, took off his badge, laid it on the duty sergeant's desk and said, "I quit." And why? He said, "I can't deal with this no more." And just walked out. And that was definitely someone who could no longer function, as you were saying. That mm-hmm. just came back to my memory when you're doing that. But some officers tried to reach out to him. He wouldn't return their phone calls. They'd go knock on his door. He'd tell him, go away. I mean, he really fell off the deep end on that. And, you know, he didn't want to be associated with anyone. He didn't want to be friends with anybody anymore. You know, he just basically, anything that had to do with the department, he just shut out of his life. And to this day, I don't know what happened to him. I have no idea where he moved away to or anything. But, you know, that cumulative thing, I don't know. Did you, in your experience, see anyone that was afflicted like that? And were they, you know, when they were diagnosed with this, were they ostracized, ridiculed, you know, thought of being weak or anything like that?
I know one person in particular. When I made division chief, assistant chief, I took over a program, and technically I had one person assigned to me. I never saw him because he was out on stress. And some of the other chiefs in the front office just kind of rolled their eyes every time they talked about him. Mm-hmm. And it's like, and I didn't really understand what was going on with him. We had worked together like 10 years prior, and our careers went separate directions. And it wasn't until after he retired and I started dealing with my own PTS that I reconnected with him for a couple reasons. I had quit drinking cold turkey, and I knew he had 20 years of sobriety. So I reached out to him like at midnight one night, not expecting a response from him until morning, but he responded within like 5 minutes. We texted back and forth and met for coffee a few days later. And that's when he explained what was going on for him, because at that time he had been, prior to being assigned to my facility, he had been working at the state level in what we call employee support services. And back then, it was a one-man show. So he would like drive 3,000 miles a month from one end of the state to the other.
Oh, I bet, yeah.
You know, dealing with people who were either dealing with alcohol abuse or drug abuse, or going through ugly divorces, you know, just trying to be that emotional support person. But he's one person taking on everything, no outlet for him. And I asked him, so what finally pushed you over the edge? And he said, there was one person that I knew really well, and I made it personal. And then that just opened the door for all of that just to basically cascade down on him. And then he was basically done at that point in time. You know, but it was good having that ability to talk with him, because he became one of my cheerleaders. And that's one of the things, like, if you're dealing with PTS, you got to have basically a tribe of people supporting you. And it's important to be open to going outside your normal purview of people that you know. Right. My biggest supporters were not my closest friends. They were not my closest co-workers or anything like that. So I reached out, like I said, to my friend who was already retired from the department, but he had dealt with basically that dual diagnosis of being an alcoholic. But he had resolved that long before he dealt with his PTS injury. You know, I had one coworker in particular who stayed in touch with me. I actually found a lot of local support just going to AA meetings, because it got me out of the house for an hour, and I didn't have to talk. I could just sit there and listen, and just listening to other people's stories of struggle helped me put things into a little bit of perspective, right? Mm-hmm. And recovery is all about shifting perception. Even that one degree of a shift in how you view whatever the incident was that got you to that diagnosis, just that one degree shift over time creates quite a different shift, right?
Yeah. Tell us about the fire in 2015 and how you were able to identify that as the trigger for your PTSD.
Yeah, so the Valley Fire in 2015 started early afternoon. I was actually off duty that day. Noticed on my pager was blinking the blue light, so I knew a group page had been sent out. And So I had turned on my scanner to listen to the radio traffic while I was working in the yard. The on-duty battalion chief asked for another chief officer. So I called in because I'm only about 20 minutes from where the fire is, knowing that another chief officer lives like right down the road from where that fire had started. He was out of the area, so I responded. My first view of the fire wasn't doing too much from the angle where I was approaching from. And I met up with the battalion chief who was running the fire at the time. He was the incident commander. And I was going to take command so he could focus on the operations side of it. And during that transition briefing, it was like, well, did you hear the Mayday traffic? And I said, no, what's going on? And so he gave me a quick rundown. We had four firefighters that were in their fire shelters. They had been surrounded by the fire. And it was a very short transition briefing at that point. He said, well, you go find them. I'm taking command. And that was the start of it.
Hey, folks, Pastor Bob here. We're all out of time for today's portion of our interview with Linda Green. She's a retired fire assistant chief from California, and she's been sharing with us the major event that she worked in 2015 that she's been able to trace back to triggering her PTSD, where she finally reached the breaking point. We've been sharing about how first responders, often have to just suppress all of their feelings, all their emotions in order to accomplish their job, and how that builds up over time. Not just first responders, we talk about the military as well. But folks, this information is so needful. I know every person out there knows a police officer, a fire officer, a firefighter, EMS worker, doctors, nurses. They're all on the front lines dealing with their own stress while they're helping us deal with our issues. So this is such needful information. Go down below into the show notes, order Linda Green's book. It's so applicable to what is going on today. Just go down, click the note, and you'll be able to order your own book, your own copy. And I recommend you get two copies. Solving the Post-Traumatic Stress Brain Injury Puzzle, a First Responder's GPS. So needful, so useful. She details in that book how she was able to battle back, grab control back of her life, and she can help you do the same. So go down below in the show notes, click on the link, get your book today, order two, give one to another, especially if you know a first responder dealing with these issues, because she may be able to help them as well. Come back tomorrow, because this is just part one of a three-part interview with Linda Green. Till then, this is Pastor Bob reminding you, be blessed in all that you do.
Are you a Christian entrepreneur, coach, or author with a message that needs to be heard? Picture this, your voice reaching thousands, your story inspiring hearts, and your business flourishing like never before. Introducing Faithcasters, the ultimate platform that connects faith-driven professionals like you with the power of podcasting. Become a sought-after guest on faith-based podcasts. Share your unique insights and connect with like-minded individuals who share your passion for faith and entrepreneurship as well. Imagine your expertise reaching a wider audience, expanding your network, and propelling your business to new heights. Well, it's all within reach with Faithcasters. So don't wait. Take the first step today on your journey to greatness by visiting our website at faithcaster.org. That's faithcaster.org. Join the Faithcasters community now and unleash the full potential of your faith-driven enterprise. You do not want to miss this opportunity. Faithcasters, where faith meets podcasting and your dreams become reality. Visit faithcaster.org. Let's soar together. And remember, anyone can be a podcaster, but only a Christian
can become a faith cast. Faithcasters, your voice, your platform, your success.